Welcome to the 223rd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thank you for listening. Chattanooga Ironman is not that far away, September 30th, almost starting to look at when taper's going to come in. So doing the long runs, doing the long rides. Unfortunately, there was an incident in the pool this morning that the pool was closed, secondary to chemical imbalances. I'm actually feeling pretty good about things. Long bikes, long runs are doing good. It's hot down here in Florida, but not too big of a problem. I still like the grape juice, maple syrup, and water for hydration, doing some bonk bars. So that's all good. On the run, I use gels, either Huma or Clif products. And then, you know, before I don't do much, before the long run, we typically have oatmeal or teff. Before the long run, I don't really do much, maybe some dried mango, and then go on out at it. And afterwards, we recover eating real food, do a little hydration with watermelon and blueberries and banana in a smoothie real quick, but then just, you know, jump into real food. We like to make a little extra on Saturday night so that when you finish with that 6-hour bike ride, you can get some food pretty quick. Nobody has to think about it too much. Just planning ahead a little bit. I like having some leftovers around for lunch as well as after workouts, so that makes it all good. Had a little fiasco today in the level 3 nutrition class. We prepare recipes, and Addie Delaney Minerich always does the nutrition facts and checks. And sometimes I'm multitasking, actually doing medical things as well as writing out recipes and altering things that I see. Sometimes we have a good recipe, but it's just not healthy enough. So I did some typos that weren't translated and forgot a few ingredients. And luckily we caught it before the cakes actually went into the oven, but that was a little bit funny. The other thing that we tried to do last week, I actually made a cake in my Instant Pot, and it turned out good using a silicone bundt insert. This week, I had a little metal one in my 8 quart, and it didn't come out as well. Not sure if it was the time or the ingredients or whatever, but it was kind of it's kind of eating the bun pan type of cake. So it's kind of nice to share misfires in class, and everybody has a laugh, and you know, things don't necessarily always have to go perfectly. A couple things this week, and just, you know, if you're out there and you go to your doctor and it's like, you know, when you go to the dentist and they say, do you floss? And you say, oh yeah, I floss, but they can tell you don't floss and nobody really says anything. Well, when you go to your plant-based doctor and you say, you know, I'm doing everything. Maybe I'm eating too many grapes. Maybe I'm eating too much fruit, but your weight's not coming down and you have a significant amount to lose. Chances are something else is going on. And it really helps if you share your honesty. I'm never there to judge when people come to the office and, you know, we go over their nutrition and what they're eating. And certainly we have a full-time registered dietitian, Addie Delaney Minerich, that helps people as well. And we do food logs. And we can tell whether people just kind of filled out their food log 15 minutes before they turned them in, especially if they're all written in the same handwriting and they're all nice and neat. You know, that's not somebody that's writing down every morsel that they put in their mouth. And we know that. And we also know that people don't like to put down their screw ups or, you know, what happened. They feel bad and they feel embarrassed. But that's really the only way anybody ever learns, is to really document what you do so that you really know what is happening. And, you know, I never call anybody out on it. And to me, it's very helpful. I have members that tell me, you know, exactly what they got into. And it's like, okay, we can work with that. And we can work on the triggers that caused them to get into foods that maybe weren't good. Or sometimes they don't understand what's in a particular food, especially if it's in a boxed item or something that's already prepared. And they think that because the front of the box may say healthy or good for you, that it's going to be okay, and it's not. But it really does help if people can be honest, and so we know where their issues are, because we can help somebody if we know where their issues are and what they are. But and we also know that we're all human, We all make mistakes, but we all have just about the same metabolism. So if somebody's not losing weight, it's not overdoing spinach or grapes or something like that. And it's a matter of, you know, where we need to tackle it. And we can do it better together and then do it better in a community than we can on our own. So don't feel like you need to be on your own. Share with your doctor what's going on. And to give a, for instance, this week, you know, I had somebody that again has having trouble losing any, you know, weight over months. And, the spouse actually asked me if I would talk about some of the high fat items that she had in the house still that I had no idea, like half and half and butter and eggs and olive oil and ranch dressing. And those clearly aren't plant-based items. And there's really not much mystery about those things. Probably embarrassment that, you know, you just go ahead and dunk it in. With half and half in your coffee, you know, obviously you have to bring it into your house, and so you have to purchase it so you know it from there. If you like putting cream in your coffee and you're making the transition to plant-based nutrition, try soy milk. It froths, and you can use a little frother and put it in, and there's enough fat in soy milk that it gives a little bit of a fullness to it, and you can, you know, you just start cutting back on that. But it's a great transition if you still like creamer in your coffee. But half and half has 7 grams of fat, and most of it is saturated fat. It also has 22.4 milligrams of cholesterol, and that's if you just use a fourth of a cup. And when people pour in dish and spoon, they don't have any idea how they're pouring in. So people may say, I just use a little bit. Everybody says they're just using a little bit. But we know for certain that if somebody had to actually measure it, it would be much more. And when we look at a plant-based diet, we're truly looking at a low-fat diet to reverse cardiovascular disease and lifestyle diseases, we're looking at 10 to 15% of calories from fat. So if you start to add up that 79 calories from just the one-fourth cup of half and half, then if you look at butter, even if you just use one little pad, and again, nobody typically does, and they're putting it on something, which I don't know even what that was. But that's another 8.1 grams of saturated fat and 25 milligrams of cholesterol. If you add an egg, you got 185 milligrams of cholesterol and 5 grams of fat. You add some olive oil, 1 tablespoon is 119 calories, 13.5 grams of fat. So you take 13.5 times 9, so you get some pretty steadily high calories from fat there. Ranch dressing, 99 calories from the 11 grams of fat there. So it's a significant amount. If you add all that up, it come out to be about 450 calories. If you look at half and half butter, one egg, olive oil, ranch dressing, and you can see how somebody could do that pretty quick. Half and half in the coffee. Butter on a piece of toast, one egg, olive oil on the roasted vegetables, and ranch dressing on the salad. So that can sneak 450 calories in quite quickly. So if you take 8 days, that can be about a pound that you're going to either put on, gain weight, or a pound that you're going to lose. But it's also the fat intake. So, you know, you were going to put chia or hemp seeds in there to get, or flax to get some omega-3s, and everything has a little bit of fat in it. It starts to add up. So now you're getting into the 20%, 25, 30%. Fat diet with a fair amount of saturated fat, you're not going to make much progress. So note to self, be honest with your physician. Say, you know, I'm having really trouble. What can I do to substitute? Because if I was going to help this person, again, half and half, I would do, if I had the opportunity, say, well, let's try soy milk, you know, instead of butter. Maybe we'll go to Earth Balance for a couple of weeks. Or why are you doing the bread in the first place with toast? Wouldn't it be better to do oatmeal? So we would eliminate the need for butter. The eggs, tofu scramble, tofu, a little piece of tofu. We do a tofu egg in our cookbook. Again, I'll take time to say, if you haven't got your plant-based wellness cookbook, the doctor, the diva, and the dietitian, 3 generations of cooking, please go over to Amazon and pick up the cookbook. But we have a tofu egg sandwich in there. That's great. You can put that on an Ezekiel English muffin. Olive oil, just not a need for it. You can make dressings very easy. We have some in the cookbook, but they don't need olive oil. If you're roasting vegetables like potatoes and you want them a little crisp on the outside, then, you know, toss them with some soy milk or almond milk, and then coat, season them and bake them. And you're not going to miss the oil, other than you're going to be an easier cleanup, and it's going to be less calories and less indigestion. And then ranch dressing, easy to make again. You can use beans or you can use a little tofu and add the same spices that's in ranch dressing, and voila, you've got it. So, we can help people if we know what they're doing, but, you know, for everybody to say that I'm just doing spinach and grapes and I can't lose weight, you know, that's not it. So we don't know where to go. So it ends up being a standstill. So don't feel free to share with your plant-based doctor what's going on, or your dietitian, because we know something's going on. And we get a little tired of playing detective sometimes. Sometimes it's fun because we find things that aha moments, and we can turn things around. But if you know it's there, let us know. A little test for you out there. You know, people like pizza. Just like Weight Watchers, I say, you know, I eat pizza. We eat pizza maybe every other week. And I make my own crust. Usually make it out of a wheat flour. You can make a polenta crust if you are gluten-free. And that is actually very easy. But today, people buy crust. And a cauliflower crust is very popular, and people think it's healthy because it's cauliflower. And believe me, the cauliflower in a cauliflower crust is not nitric oxide producing, so it does not count as your nitric oxide producing vegetables. Typically, they're made with mozzarella and egg. If they're plant-based, then they have a chemical concoction. I looked up one that had cauliflower, sesame seed flour, sunflower seed flour, olive oil, nutritional yeast, psyllium husk powder, garlic and sea salt. So these are chemistry experiments. You're better off with a whole wheat pizza crust that is just made with flour and yeast. If you're gluten intolerant, then again, go with the polenta crust. Again, you're getting some nutrients, and you don't have to worry about the olive oil. But, you know, even Domino's makes a gluten-free crust. Again, it's a concoction of rice starch, rice flour, brown rice flour, potato starch, olive oil, potato flour, cane sugar, yeast, and binders, Avicel, salt, calcium, propionate. So it's, you know, it's not something healthy that you want to eat. So make your own food, and it makes it a lot easier. There was a new study that came out that prescription EPA, which is a prescription strength fish oil, 4 grams a day, help people decrease their triglycerides, especially if used in conjunction with other lipid-lowering agents. This is meant for mainly people that have familial triglycerides in the 1500, 700 range. If your triglycerides are in the 2 to 300 range, chances are you're either pre-diabetic and your high insulin levels are causing a paradoxical breakdown of fat into your blood, or, you know, you're taking in way too much fat and it's coming spilling out in the blood just like your cholesterol is. This can be managed with getting your weight and your diet under control. Plant-based diet is going to fix this right away. So, these drugs are expensive for the regular, the person that doesn't have a severe genetic disorder, which is very rare, but it does happen. But high triglycerides are increased risk of stroke and cardiovascular disease, so you do need to get them under control. But by getting your glucose under control, eating a low-fat diet, exercising, if you want to exercise to bring your triglycerides down, you not only need to exercise, and it's more, it's exercise and train, not just physical activity. So accumulating 10,000 steps throughout the day is not what it takes to get your triglycerides down. You need to sweat to the oldies, get out and run, cycle to your sweat till you really know you've done something, both intensity and volume or weight train, that you're burning significant amount of calories. So this is a serious workout session, not just moving around. We do know that people that just move around all day long do much better. There's a study looking at housework. And people that do continuous, easy housework out throughout the day, especially older people, do just as good as people that are trying to do specific exercises. But if you're really trying to get your lipids down through exercise, you need to put a significant exertion in, both volume of that, so the quantity and the quality, as well as resistance training most days of the week. So it doesn't mean that every day has to be hard on the same body part, but maybe you want to do a pretty good weight session a couple days a week, associate it with a pretty good walk, but enough that you're getting your heart rate up to about 70% of predicted maximum heart rate. If you have cardiovascular disease and you're on medication that doesn't allow your blood pressure to come up, obviously see your doctor before you go out and say, hey, Dr. Delaney said go out and push my heart rate up to the point where I had a heart attack. If you get chest pain, you shouldn't do it. Again, see your doctor. If you're somebody with angina that's going to go exercise, you should go exercise in the fasted state. You don't want to be diverting blood flow to your gut and then go exercise. It puts much more strain on your heart. You should make sure that you're getting your nitric oxide producing greens before you do exercise and you're hydrated. In the morning, cortisol levels can be high, volume can be low. It makes people more prone to clotting. So get your nitric oxide producing beets or greens in, wait a couple hours, and then go exercise if you have cardiovascular disease. Otherwise, you can go on the fast state, but drink some water before. I listened to a podcast, The Tim Ferriss Show, with Mike Phillips, who is a conservationist and a senator. And he mentioned a quote that I thought was very relevant to plant-based nutrition and changing lifestyle, is that choice is a reality. And we all have a choice. And I hear people I went to a restaurant or I went to a wedding and I had no choice, but I had to blank. You always have a choice. There's always a choice of not eating. And most of the time it doesn't have to be that drastic, but you always have a choice and you need to own the choice that you make. And then you can adjust it. I had a member bring in a plant-based brisket that she made. It had things in it. It had a tremendous amount of ingredients. I'm not interested in something that has that many ingredients. I chose not to eat it. It's not because I didn't like the member. It's just that it had things in it that I did not want to expose myself to. So you always have a choice when you're making a decision through plant-based nutrition, and to choose whether you're going to eat someplace, to choose whether you're going to use your dollars there, and to choose whether you want to go into someplace blindly. If you're going to somebody's house for the first time, bring something. I've seen people come to my office that drive a long way for a nutrition class, and they bring a cooler so that they have something to eat before they go home so they don't have to stop. They made it a conscious choice. They're not going to wait till they're hungry or drive away and do something that maybe they shouldn't do. So you always have a choice. So, work on that. Maybe your choice is not the best one this time, but next time you do. But it's not somebody else's fault. It's not your spouse's fault or the neighbor's fault or anything. You have the choice. The other tidbit that I learned that, again, I can apply to plant-based nutrition is that he was talking about grizzly bears and, they're predators. And there is a manly section of the world that think that, people that eat vegan or plant-based are less strong and frail and non-confrontational. And it's not about how we are as humans. We're supposed to dominate. We're supposed to be the top dog. We're the number one. Well, grizzly bears are probably the largest predator in the United States. And they certainly have big canine teeth. And they certainly do eat caribou calves if available. But when they were doing research, Mike Phillips was, they actually did research and they used a dart gun on the grizzly bears in Alaska above the tree line to see how old they are by extracting a tooth and by also tagging them for future study. What they found out was, yes, these grizzly bears had come in contact with animals. They may have had dried blood or wet blood on their snouts, but their teeth were green, and they mainly subsisted on eating plants. So they had the occasional caribou. When a caribou is born, the calf actually can run at the speed of the herd early on, 3 or 4 days, he said. So it's not that easy to get even a calf or a small caribou. They can get them very quickly. So you know, if you want to tell your friends who are staunch carnivores, you know, grizzlies don't eat meat every day. It's a once in a while thing for them. So if a grizzly can sustain its size and its strength on predominantly eating plants, then I think humans can too. And, you know, we laughed in nutrition class. It's like, I don't think there would be a weight problem if all the meat eaters in the world actually had to go out and catch what they needed with their bare hands and not have any other tools available. You know, I don't think somebody would tell me, you know, hey, I had too many squirrels and that's why I've gained weight this weekend. So I think that was very, very interesting. And then they also looked at, he talked about the gray wolves. It's a very interesting podcast, and reintroducing the gray wolf back into, you know, into the wild in Colorado and Montana and Yellowstone. And, you know, we as humans, again, domination have wiped the population out essentially. And we're worried about our own livestock and the gray wolf taking, you know, eating the livestock. And it's actually a very, very rare event that cattlemen may lose. I think they said Montana lost 33 head of cattle over the year from a gray wolf, which, you know, if you think about the thousands of cattle, that's not very much. There are ways that are a little bit more labor intensive rather than a gun to avoid it by having, you know, ranchers ride the line or having some sort of protection or having when the cows are having calves to have them closer into a protective area. But the reality of it is gray wolves are non-confrontational. They don't eat humans. And it's not really very easy for them as predominantly carnivores. They are omnivores, but they eat predominantly meat. For them to survive, up to 7 to 8 out of 10 attempts at getting an animal, they fail. Their noses are long, like my German shepherds, and so they can't get a good bite on things. When they've examined post-mortem, gray wolves often have head trauma and rib fractures from their scuffles with things that got away. So they may go 2 or 3, 4 days without actually getting any meat. And, you know, as compared to, you know, a cougar that has a smaller snout and his arms will go around something. So again, to your so-called carnivore friends, you know, the wolf, you know, it's every 3 or 4 days that they get a hold of meat. So why should humans feel that, you know, we have to have all these ranchers so that we can have a burger, you know, for lunch and dinner and snack and the steak and all this other kind of stuff. So I think, you know, it's just another way to look at how humans overeat. We have so much excess in what we're consuming that it's making us sick. This podcast exists because people overconsume. And again, by switching to a plant-based diet, eating lower on the food chain, not only do we save the environment, let the wolves have you know, let them catch the animals when they need to. And that part of society can be as it is. And if you have friends that hunt, you know, and they want to go out and, hunt something down with their bare hands and that's what they're going to eat for the week. If that's all the meat they consume for the year, you know what? It probably wouldn't be that big of a problem, would it? But if you're going out every Sunday and Tuesday and Wednesday and ordering elk off a menu, then it's a different story because now you're overdoing it. So if you're going to eat meat or you know somebody that eat meat, suggest that they eat meat like a wolf would, you know, every 3 or 4 days that they consume any animal product at all. And be surprised probably how much better off they would end up being. And again, if you had to catch it yourself, you'd start looking up in the trees for the fruit and looking for the tubers and looking for grasses that you would eat. And, you know, in reality, we know that that's how early man survived, was through starches and tubers and fruit, as opposed to trying to catch something with your bare hands. And if you can track something down for, again, 20, 25 miles until it wears out, then you've probably burned enough calories to go ahead and do that. So I thought that was very interesting, and it provides great fuel for those people who feel that they need meat, because nobody, no human needs meat, and we certainly don't need the milk of another animal. And the last thing I'm going to talk about today is the difference in treatment between two lifestyle diseases. The lifestyle disease of diabetes and the lifestyle disease of breast cancer. There's a very high prevalence of both in society. Diabetes, we beat around the bush. We call people borderline diabetic, glucose intolerant, metabolic syndrome. But at that point, the fat is blocking the uptake of glucose. They have high insulin levels and in reality have the same risk as a full-blown diabetic of getting heart disease, vascular disease, kidney disease, blindness, neuropathy. It's no different. Yet we don't treat them. We wait and watch. And often people will come into my office and not even know that their hemoglobin A1C is abnormal because their doctor didn't want to tell them because they're just borderline. You need to watch what you're going to eat. And you've got time to deal with this and try to lose some weight. And it's a very gentle approach to treating diabetes and a lot of observation. And maybe we'll do stress tests or carotid evaluations, or maybe we'll start to give you medicine for your neuropathy. It's very, very slow progression. And diabetes leads to cardiovascular disease that have significant morbidity and mortality. People have most of the people that walk in my office with significant cardiovascular disease has diabetes. And the vessel damage with diabetes is very severe. It's like, you know, I describe it as a fishing worm that people have fished with for a long time. There's lots of cuts in the artery. It's diffusely diseased. There's not just one blockage, but it's everywhere. And it affects the small blood vessels that go to the eye and the kidney and the brain. So it's very devastating over time. Yet we take our time and not very aggressive in treating that and don't want to go too low and don't push people to lose weight. And let's take this now and of course the risk factors for diabetes being overweight, sedentary lifestyle, and perhaps a genetic component, but largely if somebody has a high genetic risk for adult onset diabetes, if they exercise and keep their weight under control, the chance of them getting diabetes is very, very low. Now let's look at breast cancer. 1 in 8 women develop breast cancer. It's much worse if someone is a diabetic, because high insulin levels have high insulin-like growth factor, tumor necrosis factor, and inflammatory factors that stimulate the risk of breast cancer. If you're overweight, adipose tissue actually secretes proteins, again, tumor necrosis factor, insulin-like growth factor, so all other and various other inflammatory proteins that increase the growth of breast cancer cells. People that are sedentary have an increased risk of breast cancer. We know that dairy accelerates breast cancer tumor growth. A high estrogen that a cow, if it's pregnant, it has to make growth factors as well as estrogen. So dairy plays a huge role in the progression of breast cancer and abnormal cells in all hormonally driven cancers. So what do? We screen. We screen with mammograms that may or may not be abnormal. And with the litigation in society today, a radiologist has to call anything that they see very aggressively. Numerous studies have been published in the last couple of years showing that mammogram does not help with the extension of life. Early detection through mammogram doesn't make a difference. You need a billion cell cancer cells to make a tumor the centimeter in size. And by the time you have a tumor in that size, it's been growing for multiple years, and it's not going to make a difference. Mammograms do lead to unnecessary biopsies, maiming of individuals, unnecessary treatments. And then we have a disease called ductal cancer in situ, meaning that the abnormal cells are within the mammary gland itself. They haven't went outside the cells. Now, there's a variety of different grades, and the people, researchers are defining the pathology as more and more aggressive. But a grade 3 or a high-grade ductal carcinoma in situ carries a risk of 30% over 30 years of becoming full-blown cancer. 30%, 30 years. So if somebody is postmenopausal, 30% at 70 plus 30 years. It's not a real high, it's not the real high odds. If you, somebody said, if they flipped that around and said you have a 30% survival for 30 year, over the, for to live 30 years, you would feel pretty bad. If you flip it around and you say, okay, you have a 70% survival for 30 years, doesn't sound so bad, does it? And so what can you do? Well, again, in diabetes, we watch and wait. We treat very, very slowly. But in breast cancer, we're going to treat with surgical resection. Well, if there's not a tumor, I don't know what we're going to resect. Maybe there is a tumor that's small and that's resected. We're afraid not to do things aggressively for fear it might come back. So if we take out what we can see, then we feel better that it's gone. But microscopically, it might not be gone. Whatever caused it to grow in the first place is still a potential factor. So if somebody gets a tumor taken out, but they're still eating dairy and they're still overweight and they're still eating a high-fat diet and they still have diabetes, there's a very high incidence that those cells are going to grow somewhere. So instead of looking at what you can do, all of a sudden we become victims. And when we become victims, we become helpless. And so we don't have a chance to do anything. We just sit and wait, and we're a victim of what somebody else tells us what we can do. So you need to get the information if you have ductal carcinoma in situ and start to look at your own life and see what you'd actually, what's important to you. It's certainly not an emergency any more than diabetes is an emergency for a heart attack the next day. A decision has to be made to take control of your own health. And you have a very good chance of affecting your own health by getting your nutrition under control. By eliminating all dairy products, you have a choice. Choice is a reality. Get rid of dairy. Get rid of animal fat and animal protein in the diet. Increase your exercise. Normalize your weight. Increase your greens and antioxidants. Colorful vegetables. Eat cruciferous vegetables every day. We know all these things make a dramatic impact in the progression of breast cancer. Yet when we're given a diagnosis and told we just have to follow a protocol, all of a sudden we're paralyzed and we don't do anything on our own. And we're discouraged from doing anything on our own. People have diabetes, they're saying, you should lose weight. But when people are overweight and they get breast cancer, nobody tells them to lose weight. They even do the opposite. They say, eat because you're going to have these surgeries and you might have to have chemotherapy or radiation. So you should eat all you can. So people can actually lose weight because they're more sedentary over a treatment. So, I think we have to put some of these things in perspective and take the fear, the fear-based medicine. This is a terribly scary diagnosis. But sometimes that diagnosis is being made out of the fear of the radiologist. We see these fear not to make a diagnosis, fear not to excise something. The history of breast cancer, when people had a tumor years ago, and it's actually not that many years ago. In the 40s and 50s, the radical mastectomy even took all the muscle out of the chest, not only the breast, but the muscle and the lymph nodes. And people were maimed. They had lymphedema. They had terrible scar tissue and pain. And then it became, people didn't do much better. So then they went to just a radical mastectomy and took all the breast tissue they could and all the lymph nodes that they could. And then it was like, okay, we'll just do the lumpectomy. And so we keep scaling back these surgeries because doing wide excisions of things that we can see is not the answer, because there's things that we can't see that cause a progression of disease. But what causes a disease in the first place is what we really need to address. So even if people have abnormal genetics or have genetics that predispose them for breast cancer, even if they have the bilateral mastectomies prophylactically, they're still at risk for pancreatic cancer. They're still at risk for ovarian cancer. So are those people, how many things can you take out because of fear? On the other hand, if you address your nutrition and exercise, vigorously, really exercise, then you can markedly decrease your risk. Does it make you immune to disease? No. The bad things still can happen to people that try their best at doing everything. But then at least you have some control, or you have some idea, I gave it my best shot, and now we'll deal with what we have to deal with. And you still have a better chance at a better outcome, because the studies haven't been done looking at people doing plant-based nutrition and having these different procedures versus in people that just continue to eat the way they are. So, I would refer you to Dr. McDougall has a lot of papers on his website, but there's more and more put out that we don't have to get in such a rush. Take your time and really look at your options. But with lifestyle diseases, the bottom line is we need to optimize people's nutrition and their mobility and their exercise. And you have the best chance of living the best you can for the longest that you can. And so I'd like to, just close by saying everybody that's participating in the August Birthday Month Challenge, you're doing fabulous. It is so fun to see people in their Jamila Delaney, Our Heart Beats on Plants t-shirts, doing their weightlifting and their bike riding and their running. The community is growing. It's a lot of fun. Addie's getting ready to put out another exercise circuit involving core work for this week. If you want to add that on to some of your workout routines, if you have your own, that's great. But I think it's you can collect these workouts and put them in and cycle them through your resistance training. I've been excited because I'm starting to increase the speed of some of my runs and do some speed work, and I'm actually having fun. It's changed my running to go out and just pick up the pace for little bits of a time. It makes the time go much quicker and much more enjoyable. And I continue to see progress at 57. It's the 23rd of August that I'm recording this, and I've done planks at least one time a day, if not two, all of the 23 days in August, and I'm going to continue that. I'm seeing a lot of good benefits from that. It's also nice to, I do my breath work during my planks, make sure that I'm doing good diaphragmatic breathing, seeing how few breaths that I can do by, a nice big full inhale and exhale. It also lets you know that you can tolerate a little bit more discomfort than you thought you could. So, I'm adding time onto my plank each week. So I'd encourage you to go over to drdelaney.com, check out some of the posts. If you'd like to sign up for our newsletter, we put out monthly. That would be great. I do a blog post. Addie does a blog post over there. So there's a lot of good content. Certainly see what our practice has to offer, because we really would like to help you achieve optimal health and wellness if you are interested. No matter where you are, we have a program for you, whether you're in town or not in town. Check out mamasez.com. It's mamasezz.com. There's now an athletic bundle that Addie and I approve, and you can order those. It has the Beat Strong, so I'm going to take some of those to Chattanooga with me, so I have beats. And have some of the food for before and after, so we don't have to cook all that much. And I know I have good nutrition at my hand, so check that. We have a link on our website to get there. So again, over drdelaney.com, you can click on the Mama Says button there and get there. If you haven't been to at the website, you can also get your click to the link to get to the cookbook. So we'd love to have you buy one of those. I'll be in Naples, Green Scene, next Tuesday to do a book signing and talk about the book. And it's going to be a potluck down there, so you can look up Naples Green Scene if you're in that area. Love to meet you. Again, I'll be in Chattanooga, Tennessee for the Ironman. So, if you're around there, I'd love to meet up with you as well. Until next time, next week, be in control of your own health. Take control by eating a plant-strong, colorful diet, and get out and move this week. Have a good week.